The importance of detecting lung cancer early. Lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer deaths, and until recently, there was no good method of detecting the disease early enough to prevent people from dying. But a large national study has found that using a form of CAT scan to screen for lung cancer can reduce mortality in current and former smokers, the two groups at highest risk for lung cancer. And the disease doesn't just affect smokers. Today, we'll learn more about this type of cancer, including the risk factors such as smoking, secondhand smoke, lack of exercise, and environmental factors. We'll also learn about proactive measures that you can take by quitting smoking, maintaining a healthy diet, and by exercising. Maine Calling examines new advances in detecting lung cancer. First, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. Lung cancer is the leading cancer killer in men and women in the U.S. Each year, it kills more than 150,000 people. If detected early, there are effective treatment options to combat the disease. But for the majority of those with lung cancer, a diagnosis comes after it has reached an advanced stage, which leads to a poor prognosis. Today on the program, we're going to learn about a new lung cancer screening program at Maine Medical Center. We'll hear about the treatment options and where to turn for help. In the studio with me, Dr. Mayuko Fukunaga. She is a medical director of the Thoracic Oncology Center at Maine Medical Center. Dr. Christian Thomas is an attending physician with the Maine Center for Cancer Medicine, who specializes in hematology and oncology. And Dr. Paul Hahn is with us. He's director of Maine Medical Center's Center for Outcomes Research and Evaluation. And, of course, we want to hear from you. Our phone number, 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Email address, talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Dr. Christian Thomas, we'll start with you. Docs like you are very busy treating this disease in Maine, unfortunately. How prevalent is lung cancer right now in the landscape of cancers? Is it declining, growing? What are we seeing?
Well, thank you for having me on the show, Keith. Lung cancer remains a huge problem, not only because of prevalence, but also, as you mentioned, because of the very, very high rate of patients who die from this cancer. So just to put things a bit into perspective, lung cancer probably kills about three times the number of patients that are unfortunate to die from breast cancer, for instance, although the numbers are roughly equal. So it's a much more deadlier disease. Coming back to your question, it's very prevalent in Maine. Maine has one of the highest prevalences of lung cancer in the union of all cancers.
Now, is that because of the aging population that we hear about all the time, high smoking rates, a combination of both?
It's probably a combination of both. Of course, we don't know all the causes of lung cancer, but what we do know is that tobacco plays a huge role and probably the most important role for patients to develop this disease. So you're absolutely right. The age of patients and the number of Mainers who smoke plays a huge role in that.
Dr. Mayuko Fukunaga, what are the main types of lung cancer? We talked generically about lung cancer, and we know the association with smoking, but there are different types of cancer, and they kind of operate in slightly different ways.
Yeah, so when we talk about lung cancer, we different in two categories mainly. One is a small cell lung cancer, and the other is non-small cell lung cancer. We start learning a lot more about each cancer. So we try to identify not only small cell cancer, but non-small cell cancer, but we'd like to know whether it's adenocarcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, large cell carcinoma, because depend on that, treatment is going to be different. And I think Christian can answer more. But we start learning more about personalized treatment for each cancer patient. So we start looking for more detailed information.
We'll go back to Dr. Thomas on those questions. But you're in the diagnosis business in this realm. What's the sort of, and I know every patient is different, but what's a typical scenario? Someone comes in with spitting up blood, or they've lost weight, or they can't breathe. What are you seeing in your office?
Yeah, I think most of the time they just happen to have a chest X-ray just because they have a bronchitis, or they go into the hospital for surgery and happen to have a chest X-ray and find a spot in the lung. And then first question is this a new spot, or is this something patient had from a long time ago? So first question to patient is usually, do you have any other chest imaging prior to that? So I try to get the old imaging information first. And then we usually order CAT scan. CAT scan is a better X-ray and better imaging, so we can get more information about how big is the spot is, what kind of shape it is. Is there any other spread in your chest? So those are usually first step.
Yeah. Dr. Han, so sometimes an X-ray, which is the first step in some of this process, though, as we're saying, isn't always reliable. You can't see necessarily whether a spot is a good thing or a bad thing. So CAT scan, is that what's the new treatment that is more reliable in terms of screening and diagnosing?
So that's correct. Chest X-rays really have been shown over time not to be very beneficial or helpful in detecting lung cancer. And so really until very recently, the last couple of years, there has really not been a good way to detect lung cancer early enough that we can actually save lives. But CAT scans, as Dr. Fukunaga mentioned, are really a new technology. This is really a special kind of X-ray that's used that is much more sensitive at detecting small tumors and cancers at a stage that they can be treated. And there's been a large national study called the National Lung Cancer Screening Trial, which showed that using CAT scans can actually save lives. So for the first time, we have a technology that can help us to detect cancer at an early enough stage that we can actually do something about it and save people from dying from lung cancer.
But that doesn't mean that we're going to simply screen everybody over the age of 30 going forward. There are risk groups that you look at. Who are they?
So that's a really good point. So the National Lung Screening Trial really dealt with a specific category of high-risk patients, that is, patients who are at higher risk of lung cancer than the average population. And this was really limited to smokers. You had to have a very heavy smoking history, greater than 30 pack years. That's, you know, a pack a day for 30 years. And it was really limited.
Or two packs for 15.
Exactly, right.
Or I suppose theoretically 30 packs for 1 year. But
for 1 year, right, if you're extreme.
But yeah.
But and so it was really a high-risk group of patients, and the lung cancer screening trial also enrolled patients who are between the ages of 55 and actually 75, although current guidelines are recommending that we screen people from the ages of 55 and 80. That's the most recent guidelines from the United States Preventive Services Task Force. So these are really, as you say, not your average person, but it's people who are at high risk of lung cancer that benefit from screening.
And I've read that that the risk decreases after 15 years from the point that someone stops smoking.
Exactly.
Is that because the lungs have healed, if you will, or because the likelihood of a cancer appearing disappears over time?
I think that's a good question. I think the latter explanation you said is more accurate, that we just know that risk tends to diminish after someone stops smoking. And whether that's due to so-called healing or other processes, that's less clear. But you point out to the third kind of criterion for people who are in the high-risk category. They have to be either current smokers or have quit no less than 15 years previously.
So. And what's the downside to screening a bigger pool of people, maybe whose parents had lung cancer or, you know, might have had an exposure to asbestos at one point in their lives? In other words, is there an inherent health risk to the screening itself in terms of radiation, or is it purely cost, or how do you weigh that?
Well, there's a few downsides, and this is why it's actually this use of lung cancer screening is not a clear-cut decision for everybody. It's something that individual people need to decide based on their own preferences and values. The main potential harm from lung cancer screening is a high risk of false positive exams. And for example, and what that means is that a good number of people, up to a quarter of people who actually get a lung cancer screening test or a lung cancer CT scan, will have an abnormal test that actually turns out not to be cancer. So it's a false alarm. And why is that important? It's important because these people will often end up either living with some anxiety about potentially having cancer and, you know, this not being the case, or they could even be subjected to further tests like biopsies or even lung surgery to determine whether it's cancer or not, only to find out that it wasn't. And so there is a risk of that. There's also a risk of radiation exposure, which we think is pretty minimal. So the amount of radiation with a low-dose CAT scan is very small, but still the real risk of that radiation over time is not yet known. And then finally, it is true that if implemented on a large scale, this could be costly, you know, as well.
All right, Dr. Thomas, so let's go back to the types of cancer and educate us, if you would, a little bit about this. As we heard, there's a small and to the layman, strangely titled non-small, we would call that large, but we realize that there's a reason for that. But let's talk about small cell cancer first and what we know about it.
Yeah, certainly. About 20% of all patients who have lung cancer have this type, this small cell type. And what we do know about it, Keith, is that it tends to disseminate early. And what that means is that very, very often, even if only one particular area of the lung seems involved, nonetheless removing that part of the lung, which is what is traditionally done for this type of treatment, is not enough to remove all the cancer because smaller cancer cells have broken loose and have started to spread through the body. And although that is an issue for all types of cancer, it's a particular issue for the small cell, this early spread of cancer cells through the body. It's a particular issue for this type of cancer. And because of that, we very often treat or use treatments that are designed to cover the whole body.
So chemotherapy, for example.
For instance, chemotherapy, which is a medicine that is taken as a pill form or it's injected into the body. And what it then does, it goes through the whole body and helps to kill cancer cells wherever they are.
Is a small cell linked to cigarette smoking? Is that the primary cause?
Yeah, very much so. So it is probably the type of cancer that is the most linked to tobacco exposure, to a point where a former teacher of mine said to me, if you have a patient with small cell lung cancer who credibly tells you that he didn't smoke, doubt the diagnosis. So I actually have never seen a small cell lung cancer patient who has not smoked, and typically heavily.
Yeah. How does, in terms of early diagnosis, detection, is it harder to find, to detect, than the non-small types that we'll talk about in a moment?
I wouldn't say so. I think what Dr. Fukunaga said earlier is really important, and that is that we desperately really need to have methods of early detection for all types of lung cancer. So they all really share that. What's different about this particular type, the small cell type, is that even if detected at an early stage, it often has spread through the body already. So it's a lot harder to cure, per se, than some of the other types of lung cancer, the non-small cell lung cancer.
Well, and let's talk about those. So within the non-small, there are a few different types that are described based upon where they tend to appear and the shape of the cells?
Yeah, basically what happens is that when a cancer diagnosis is made, a small piece of tissue is removed, usually with a biopsy, and there are different ways of doing that technically. But what happens then is that the pathologist looks at this small piece of tissue under microscope and determines what type of cancer we're dealing with. The second step then is to run a molecular analysis. And what that means is that we're not only now looking at the cancer cells, but we're also looking at the blueprint of the cell, the DNA. And that holds the code for the cancer cell and tells us very, very often what type of cancer cell it is, not only that, but also what the best treatment option would be. We're now able to distinguish different treatment options based on the type of cancer we're dealing with.
And are some more aggressive than others? I don't know if aggressive is the right word to use, but do they tend to metastasize more aggressively, quickly, into different parts of the body?
Oh, absolutely. The two main types of this non-small cell lung cancer type are adenocarcinoma. It's about 60% of all lung cancers, actually. And then squamous cell cancers, and the rest are a lot less common, the other types of non-small cell lung cancer. And both of these can metastasize actually early as well. So that brings us really back to Dr. Han's suggestion about screening. We desperately need better screening. Right now, what we have is a situation where about only 1 in 5 patients are actually able to go to surgery, which is the only known cure for lung cancer.
I'm at 1 in 5?
1 in 5, that's correct, about 20%.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll talk about some preventative measures, quitting smoking, probably first on the list. We also want to hear from you. The number, 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Maine's public universities. When you think about your future, think Maine. Learn more at think.maine.edu. By Casella, committed to improving Maine's air quality through the conversion of landfill gas to energy. Casella, giving resources new life. And the Orthopedic Institute of Central Maine, committed to regaining mobility and getting rid of the pain. JointsME.org.
The viola you're hearing now may be worth $45 million.
There are approximately 650 Stradivari instruments in existence today, but only 10 of these are complete violas, and the McDonald is the best of these violas by some distance.
Listen for yourself later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us at 4 o'clock here on MPBN. News.mpbn.net, the news you need from MPBN and NPR with a clean new look and a great mobile experience. It's the online resource that provides you with in-depth coverage of the most important stories taking place in Maine and beyond from a source you know and trust, your public radio station. That's news.mpbn.net, whenever and wherever you want.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, what we know about detecting and treating lung cancer. My guest, Dr. Miyuko Fukunaga, is the medical director of the Thoracic Oncology Center at Maine Medical Center. Dr. Christian Thomas is an attending physician with the Maine Center for Cancer Medicine, specializing in hematology and oncology. And Dr. Paul Hahn is director of Maine Medical Center's Center for Outcomes Research and Evaluation. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to the phones in a minute, but I wanted to follow up on this link between smoking and cancer. And I'll let anyone answer this question, there are cases of people who never smoked who may get a form of cancer that's sort of associated with smoking. People who never lived in a secondhand smoke environment. What do we know about how that happens, or is it hereditary? Is it an environmental thing?
Well, I'll be glad to talk to that. First of all, you're right. We sometimes see patients who have no tobacco exposure. And I would say that numbers-wise, about 90% of patients who I see who have lung cancer have a clear smoking history. That means that 10% do not. Of those 10%, about half of them have a secondhand smoke exposure. So they were exposed to tobacco smoke through a spouse, through families, or sometimes through what their profession was. Bartenders tend to be at high risk, things like that. But that leaves about 5% of patients who have no clear tobacco smoking exposure. And those patients may have other risk factors. And we understand some of those risk factors now. For instance, there are some environmental factors like radon, which there's a big push now to screen houses for levels of radon. We know that radon, which is a gas that comes from the soil, can increase your risk of lung cancer. And as you mentioned, Keith, there are some hereditary factors as well. There are sometimes cancers that run in families. They tend to be different types of cancer. Usually they are adenocarcinomas, which is a form of non-small cell lung cancer. Not so much the other types, not so much, for instance, small cell, as we discussed earlier. But by and large, they're treated the same as the others are.
We have a note from Christy via Facebook, who's executive director of the Maine Indoor Air Quality Council. asking about radon. Do we have any sort of sense of the real connection between radon and exposure and lung cancer?
We do. It's environmental studies. There was a large study that was done in Sweden that could show that when there's a significant radon exposure, and it depends a little bit on how you define that, and we now have actually safety levels that have been established, but if there's a significant radon exposure, that the risk of lung cancer roughly doubles compared to the general population. Mm-hmm. So it seems to be real as best as I can tell. And the other thing is it's avoidable.
800-399-3566 to join the conversation. We'll go first to Deb. Hi, Deb. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, my name is Deb Violet. I'm with the president and CEO of Free Me From Lung Cancer. It's the only nonprofit organization based in the state of Maine, dedicated solely to lung cancer research, raising funds for lung cancer research and patient care. You were talking a lot about smoking and lung cancer, and you know, some of the statistics that I, you know, have been reviewing from the National Cancer Institute, it shows that nearly 60% of all newly diagnosed lung cancers are never smokers or people that quit smoking decades ago. And I just wanted to kind of bring that about because you know, smoking, you know, brings around the stigma that, you know, you've caused this disease yourself, when in fact nobody really deserves lung cancer, whether you smoked or not.
Yeah. So is there? So Deb, are you saying that the causes, the link between smoking and incidence of these lung cancers is overstated, or are you simply pointing out the stigma which many have said may be affecting research, or make the case that
Right. Stigma
is, well, it's your fault, so we're not going to help you, sort of a thing?
Right. It's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, I'm not advocating that smoking is good because, you know, if you smoke, you're going to get some form of cancer. Nobody's going to ask somebody that has prostate or colon or breast cancer if they smoked. Yet smoking causes those diseases as well, including heart and circulatory disease and COPD, and I think even diabetes. But, you know, if somebody presents themselves as, you know, a lung cancer patient, the first thing someone is going to say is, did you smoke or are you smoking? So there is a big stigma there, and we need to overcome that because even, you know, lung cancer patients need to be supported and cared, you know, for as well as other cancers. And that's basically what I wanted to get across. Research has found out that, you know, like you said, you had mentioned that radon is a second leading cause of lung cancer. Maine has an incredibly high rate of radon here in Maine. And it's something that, you know, can be remedied from homes and well waters. And everybody should have their home and well water tested annually for this particular gas. And even research has even gone even further now that we know that there are genetic mutations, such as the epidermal growth factor receptor, which was the first gene mutation discovered back in 2004. And then there's an ELK gene mutation. And, you know, there's probably over 200 new gene mutations that scientists have been able to discover. And we do have, you know, some targeted therapy for very few of those types of gene mutations.
Yeah. All right, Deb. Well, thanks so much for joining the conversation. I appreciate it. This may be a good point to talk about prevention. Deb is mentioning a lot of things outside of cigarette smoking, some that are preventable, some that are not. But as physicians, what would you say is, I think we know that stopping smoking is number one. We don't probably have to visit that. But what are some of the other, Paul Hahn, factors that can significantly decrease the risk of lung cancers in people?
Unfortunately, we've exhausted that list in terms of things that can be readily done that we really understand well. So smoking cessation, and I agree with the caller, and I think she raised some really important points that we ought to look at smoking and kind of think about that as something that we can really intervene upon and not stigmatize people for that particular behavior. But Unfortunately, aside from smoking cessation and radon mitigation, those are really the two only types of interventions for which we have strong evidence that, those things will actually help people. And they are definitely modifiable risk factors. You know, people have tried other things like vitamin supplementation, for example, but you know, there's nothing that's really been supported by the evidence that we can point to yet. So that's why there's been such a push to really focus on early detection as the way to control this disease.
All right, let's go to Carol in Portland. Hi, Carol.
Oh, hi.
Hi, go ahead, please.
I have a very strong family history of lung cancer. My mother died of lung cancer when she was 70, and both her sisters and my cousin, who is my age. And I know my mother and my cousin both had the non-common form. In listening to you, I'm thinking that's probably the small cell. And I did smoke when I was young for 13 years, but haven't smoked since 1976. So I'm wondering whether I know I don't fall in the guidelines for screening, but given the strong family history.
Yeah. Dr. Hunt?
So you are actually pointing out some real limitations in our knowledge currently about who is a good candidate for lung cancer screening. There are many experts who would argue that you would be actually a good candidate for screening because of your very strong family history. Unfortunately, current expert bodies like the United States Preventive Services Task Force and others are really trying to stick to the evidence and look at this and looking at this trial called the National Lung Screening Trial to make and base recommendations. And so within the confines of that trial, really what we talked about, people 55 to 80 years old who have had a strong smoking history and are either currently smoking or haven't quit more than 15 years ago, this is all we can say if we're sticking to the evidence. But there are people and experts out there who do believe that patients like you ought to be screened. We just should know that there's not strong evidence yet that would really help you. But this is the kind of decision that I think you could bring up with your physician and talk further about.
Dr. Fukunaga, I was wondering when patients come to you, by the time they come to you, it's already been established that they have a problem? Or do you have patients like Carol who may come in and say, look, I'm worried about this. I have a history. I smoked. I feel like I have a cough. I really want to be screened, even though I'm not technically qualifying under the guidelines.
Yeah, so I think most of my patients already have some sort of a chest imaging and a spot, but there are some few patients who, so like caller, like who has a strong family medical history, they worry about the risk of lung cancer. And my answer to, you know, these patients are, you know, we can go over the guideline. And then there are some, you know, big center hospital which doing a clinical trial for the patient who has a strong family medical history. So I sometimes help patient to find the connection so that they can participate in study in the big cancer center hospital. So they're not going to necessarily get the typical lung cancer screening, but they're going to be in the clinical trial. And their information going to be valuable for us to figure out what is a correct way to do the lung cancer screening in the future.
Yeah. 1-800-399-3566. Carol, did that answer your question?
It did. Thank you. You know, a lot to think about.
All right. Thank you for joining us today. We'll go back to the phones. I have some other questions here from Facebook, but I want to get into treatment. Dr. Thomas, as you mentioned earlier, I guess there's surgery, there's chemotherapy, radiation.
Absolutely. We use radiation as well.
So just run through quickly, if you would, give us a primer on when things are called for and can be used and when they are not.
So typically what happens is that we had earlier discussed how these cancers are being diagnosed. Patients typically have an X-ray or some sort of test that shows that there's something wrong, and then a biopsy is taken, which is a small sample of lung tissue. It gets taken out, it gets analyzed, and then the diagnosis is made. The next really important step that happens is that we determine how much cancer is present. So we run a series of tests. I don't want to go through all the details now because of time, but we run through a series of tests. Some of them are special X-rays, and then there are some other tests to show us exactly where the cancer is. Once we have that very, very important information, we can explain to the patient what the best treatment option would be for them. If typically, if the spot of cancer is only in one part of the lung, then we refer the patient to a surgeon who is very well versed, and we have an excellent surgeon here in Maine right now.
So at that point, you have done bone scans, or you're looking where this cancer tends to spread to?
That's exactly right. We've basically examined the whole body. There is a scan called a PET scan that is used for this particular purpose to see exactly where the cancer cells might be.
And you'll see hot spots, or what is it you're looking for?
Yes, yes. Basically, what you're looking at when you look at these scans is, and I review these with patients all the time, but basically having an anatomic image. You see the bones, you see the lungs and the hearts and the great arteries and all that stuff, and then you see the abnormalities that you're interested in. But because of this new technology, you can now determine how much activity in these various areas we can detect. And that tells us something about where the cancer is.
And if it hasn't spread and you do the surgery and it's excised, then that's a pretty good prognosis, assuming you are correct.
That's right. And that really then depends on how you define pretty good prognosis. I will say that other early stage cancers have a higher rate of cure than lung cancer does, which is kind of interesting to talk about. For instance, the very early stages of lung cancer, there's still a 20 to 30% risk of it coming back, which is actually very high if you think about it.
Yeah. So let's say then, but you do find that it has spread or metastasized. These scans find these hot spots. Mm-hmm. At that point, then you're talking about a chemotherapy, which is a full body treatment. Even early on, is the prognosis?
Yes, even early on, I would say that if the spread of the cancer is contained within the chest area, we typically will combine chemotherapy with other treatments like radiation. But if it's outside the chest, then we're talking about using chemotherapy alone without other treatment options, because other treatment options would not be effective for this. And at that point in time, we're also talking about not a curative intervention, meaning that typically these patients will learn to live with cancer, and we try to support them with the treatments as best as we can. But we will not be able to completely get them cancer-free at that point.
And is there a risk of where radiation actually, the risk of the radiation treatment creates new risk? Is that possible?
New risk in terms of causing other cancers, we don't see that so much in lung cancer per se. That can be an issue with other cancers. But what we do see all the time is that both radiation and chemotherapy, and all treatments for that matter, really have substantial side effects.
All right.
Have substantial side effects.
Let's go back to the phones to Jackie in Old Orchard Beach. Hi, Jackie. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi. Excuse me. I'm sort of interested in what your recommendations would be for the vast majority of people who may not be at risk for lung cancer pursuant to those guidelines you spoke of. We're all educated to be proactive in taking care of our own health, and since early detection is key, what does one do to help optimize the early detection? They're not going to fall within these guidelines. They don't have the risk factors. They're not smoking. They've tested the radon. But I know too many people who have gotten non-smoking lung cancer, and it was too late. So how does the ordinary citizen, so to speak, continue that proactive care of themselves under your recommendations? What would you suggest we do?
Dr. Hahn?
I think it's another great question that I wish we had more answers to. I think really if you're health conscious and you're trying to maintain a healthy lifestyle, you're seeing your physicians regularly, you're obtaining other preventive services, you're not smoking, you're attending to radon, that's the most you can do. And I think what we also don't want to do is to sort of promote excessive concern, about lung cancer or any other cancer for that matter. I think there are certainly evidence-based guidelines that we try to follow. I think beyond that, it's really up to all of us, and patients and physicians included, to really just try to kind of focus on just general health, not, I guess, excessively be concerned about things like this as well, about things that we don't know how to intervene on or prevent. And so, you know, I would just say leading a healthy lifestyle, doing the best you can, following up with your physician for regular care, you know, is the most that we can really recommend.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, more of your questions and comments. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Sweetser, serving mental and behavioral health needs of children, adults, and families in Maine since 1828. Sweetser.org. And Silly's in Portland's East End, open at 11 Tuesday through Friday and at 9 for brunch on the weekends, with vegan and gluten-free options. Silly's.com.
When you sell your soul, it opens a deep, dark hole. When you sell your soul, it opens a deep, dark hole.
That's Mary Gaucher from her new album, Trouble and Love. On the next Fresh Air, she performs autobiographical songs in our studio. Join us.
It's coming up at 7 o'clock here on MPBN. And looking ahead to our 1 o'clock Public Affairs Hour, the Commonwealth Club of California will be welcoming Texas Governor Rick Perry on a talk called Energy Independence in America. Governor Perry believes his state is leading the way for America in creating energy independence by producing crude oil and electricity in many forms, including natural gas, coal, nuclear, wind, solar, biofuel, and hydroelectric generation. In a recent letter to President Obama, Governor Perry wrote that the current federal policies will, quote, incapacitate and possibly eliminate critical sources of energy while stifling job creation and threatening American energy policy. All of that coming up at 1 o'clock here on MPBN.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, lung cancer, what we know about the disease, and what's on the horizon in terms of new treatments. In the studio with me, Dr. Mayuko Fukunaga, Medical Director, Thoracic Oncology Center at Maine Medical Center, Dr. Christian Thomas, Attending Physician with Maine Center for Cancer Medicine, specializing in hematology and oncology, and Dr. Paul Hahn, Director of Maine Medical Center's Center for Outcomes Research and Evaluation. What questions do you have? The number, 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. So far, we've had a few calls about people who are outside the guidelines of screening that we've talked about, but who really are worried about it. Is there a tension here, and this is to anyone on the panel here, a tension between this sort of duty to raise awareness, to educate people about the risks of lung cancer, but then in the next breath sort of put the brakes on in terms of overdiagnosis?
Yeah, so I think I can answer that question. So like Dr. Han explained before, when we do the lung cancer screening by low-dose CT, we basically find whether you have a spot which could be cancer or not. So, and most of the spot is not the cancer, and most of the time the spot is too small. So I just have to repeat another CAT scan, make sure it's not going to grow. Or sometimes I have to do the biopsy, and biopsy itself carries a risk. So sometimes patient can get the complication just to prove it's not the cancer. And so those are risks we have to think about. Other things, I think, Keith, you asked me this question at the beginning of the program, what kind of symptom patient can have when patient have lung cancer. Some of the symptom can mimic like pneumonia. So if you have a bronchitis or pneumonia, and if you get the correct treatment, and if it's not gets better, that may be the time you need to talk with your primary care doctor and maybe get the chest X-ray or CAT scan, make sure nothing is missed. But pretty much those are things we can do. Like we talk about, there's not so many good intervention except for smoking cessation and reduce radon exposure. We know there are some occupational exposure risk, and I think we're getting better at reducing occupational exposure at this moment as well.
Yeah, Dr. Thomas.
Yeah, I can echo that. I mean, I think every screening test has the problem that you tend to overdiagnose some patients who don't have cancer and then go through procedures, and the procedures have side effects and they're costly. And at the end of all of this, you've really worried somebody. You've really terrified somebody just to tell them at the end, don't worry about it. And so that is really why we tell patients that we cannot just randomly run CAT scans on just everybody. And so Dr. Han's research really has to do a lot with how do you get to a decision that is right for an individual patient? Because as much as we like research and like to follow guidelines, we also have a real patient sitting in front of us, and the solution has to work for that person. And so that interaction between the patient and the physician is really at the heart of all of this. Yes, you should follow the guidelines, but then you have the real life and the patient sitting in front of you, and you have to modify it.
Okay, let's go to Bill in Portland. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, I'm interested in the dangers of recurrence of a treated lung cancer. I was operated on 5 years ago, and I'm at a stage now where I only have to go back for a follow-up of a year. But I've received an awful lot of ionizing radiation over the last few years, and I'm curious, are there any statistics in the on recurrence on treated lung cancers?
Bill, I mean, congratulations, first of all. I mean, you have been very fortunate to receive these treatments and that you're cancer-free right now, so that's wonderful. I would say that the risk of having another cancer is there. It's real. It's not small. There are all kinds of statistics for this particular situation. Depends a little bit on the timing. You said you're out now 4 years from your treatment. The risk of the same cancer coming back diminishes each year. So now you are actually much better off in terms of not getting the same kind of cancer back, but you are also at risk of having another cancer in your lungs or somewhere in your mouth or in your voice box or in those areas, all of which were maybe exposed to whatever gave you the cancer in the first place. I don't want to presume that it was tobacco, but it could have very well been, or maybe radon.
Yeah. So, and for patients like Bill, is there sort of a desire to be screened, you know, every 6 months at that point because you're worried about it? And is that another then issue about how many times can we do this for folks who are nervous?
So you're not talking about screening in that situation. You're talking about surveillance.
Yeah.
So the difference is screening applies to everybody who maybe has a risk factor, and surveillance is something that you do for a patient who's already had the cancer and now you want to make sure they don't get it again because you want to find it early. And there are actually guidelines for the kind of situation that Bill is in right now, and the guidelines say that you should do a CAT scan every 6 months for about 5 years.
Yeah, okay. Bill, good luck to you. Let's go to fit in a few more calls here before we run out of time. Let's go to, is it Edwina in Portland?
Yes, very good. My quick question is regarding cancers that might develop from non-normal things like smoking and radon. I'm wondering, for example, asthma, be well controlled, et cetera, if there's been any data about percentage of things like that, if how much something like lifelong of asthma would turn into or develop into a cancer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone, a connection between asthma?
Yeah. I think I can answer a question. Yeah. So I think we have a lot of data for COPD emphysema patient and also idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. Not so much for asthma at this moment.
Yeah, COPD. So there are. What you were saying? There are connections there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So patient with COPD, patient with emphysema, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. They are at the higher risk to develop lung cancer.
Is that because of the link between the conditions, or the fact that they probably smoked if they had the other diagnosis?
Yeah, I think one is obviously smoking, but also there is some like inflammation going on in their lung, and that can cause scar. And some people believe that could be the cause of the developing lung cancer.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Han.
One thing I want to add, too, is that I think where screening and early detection is going to move in the future is more towards incorporating risk factors like that. And so there are a lot of people who are trying to develop better ways to assess a person's individual risk of lung cancer using things like COPD that Dr. Fukunaga mentioned and other characteristics so that we can get smarter about who to screen and really screen the people at truly the highest risk. And maybe for everybody else, we sort of leave them alone and not have them worry about lung cancer excessively, and we use this more intelligently. So I just want to point it out that that's really the future of screening, and there's already activity going on to develop those methods.
So these are the screening guidelines, do you think, are they going to evolve over time?
Yes.
And would your prediction be that they would broaden or not necessarily?
I think they're going to both broaden and get more narrow. And I think we're going to be smarter. You know, so right now we're just saying if you're 55 to 80, you have a certain smoking history, you know, we come in and we'll screen you. That's kind of a blunt way of doing this. But if we were more intelligent and we could incorporate also genetic risk factors, for example, we could really determine who's more precisely at high risk, who's at low risk, and then, again, maybe tailor our approach to that.
Are there issues where if you are outside the screening guidelines, but you're worried that your insurance might question the coverage on it and not pay, is that a battle that's playing out? Or
it is, and I'll let my colleagues comment on that. It is definitely a battle. Here at Maine Medical Center, we've established a screening program really through the generosity of the Maine Cancer Foundation, where we're offering screening for at least a few people so we can test out this concept. But the problem is now not all insurers have caught up with that. It will be an expense to patients, so I think it is a little bit of a battle that's being played out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, okay, we'll have to watch that. With that, we're out of time. I wish we had more time. There are certainly more calls, and people are very interested in this subject. But Drs. Fukunaga, Thomas, and Dr. Han, thank you all for being here today.
Thank you for having us on the show.
Dr. Mayuka Fukunaga is medical director of the Thoracic Oncology Center at Maine Medical Center. Dr. Christian Thomas is an attending physician specializing in hematology and oncology with the Maine Center for Cancer Medicine. And Dr. Paul Han is director of Maine Medical Center's Center for Outcomes Research and Evaluation. Today's program was produced by our volunteer, Cindy Han. Yes, a relationship there. Dr. Jonathan Smith. Cindy also answered your calls. Jonathan Woodward ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. You can also find our podcasts on iTunes. Tomorrow on the program, new information from Maine's Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. Have a great afternoon.